connection to the binding stone. What were binding stones? Bastions meant reality with them. Messengers invaded Domar using them. Champions became demigods by binding their entire beings to them. Was Omria herself connected to the binding stones? Nathan realized his thoughts had drifted, but his realization felt important. The gems weren't powered by the bastion. They were powered by the binding stone, using the bastion as a conduit. Moving on, Nathan focused on Kiana. Her emotions and thoughts continued to circle him. He reached out to them in order to finalize the process, and he felt her. These thoughts weren't attacking him or attracted to him. They protected him. Kiana exuded protectiveness and love for him. Nathan closed his eyes and grimaced as Kiana's emotions washed over him, but he pushed on. The process took almost as long as it had to give Faye her second gem. Nathan needed to exclude thoughts that weren't related to the gem, but that was difficult. When he finished, he knew two things. Kiana's gem was far more powerful than most monogems, and she was rutting. Nathan filed away the latter thought, as the horse girl did a great job hiding her lust for him. He only realized because some of her thoughts were a touch too lewd compared to her usual self. Once the process was finished, he left. Kiana's mind kept watch over him the entire time. 10 minutes had passed outside. Nathan let her take a break. The other champions led her to a seat and gave her a glass of water. They whispered and giggled to each other, and Kiana joined in slowly. Nathan always found that aspect off-putting. He supposed he was touching the mind of a bunch of women, so it was natural they bonded and gossiped about him. After a few minutes, Kiana rose. She brushed off the comforting hands of the other champions with a smile. "Can we find out what it does?" she asked Nathan brightly, her diamond gleaming with magic. Nathan had an odd feeling about the gem. He always had a connection to his champions, but this one felt stronger than normal. Something might go wrong, but he kept his expression neutral. "I know you're worried, but I want to know," Kiana said, nearly bouncing on the balls of her feet. He blinked. "Why do you think I'm worried?" "Aren't you always worried?" She shrugged. "It's just a feeling." Was she like Seraph, who somehow monitored his emotions? But Seraph had years of experience. Kiana had only just been gemmed. "Given what I put into the diamond, it should be a protective enhancement, rather than an ability. The first ability is more emotion-driven. Like with Faye, you'll be able to choose your next one," he explained. Then he pointed at one of the wolf champions he had given a strength enhancement to. "Punch Kiana." "Huh? You want me to hit her? Won't that really hurt her? Like, I can bend steel normally, but now I can bend lots of steel," the newly enhanced champion said. "Trust me, she'll be fine," Nathan said, not feeling as certain as he sounded. Kiana gave him a look that he ignored. Nervously, the wolf beastkin walked up to Kiana. "Go ahead," Kiana said, patting her shoulder. The wolf girl shrugged, then snapped out a punch that created its own wind. A moment later, she jumped back, howling with pain. Kiana's diamond glowed. Nathan felt a strange sensation, as if something was tugging at his link to her.
"I think I broke my hand," the wolf girl yelped.
Narime stepped in and used her regeneration magic. After a minute of wasted effort, the new human champion stepped in and used her healing magic instead. It worked a lot better. "What was that?" Kiana asked, looking at Nathan in surprise. He grimaced. "Punch me next." The wolf girl looked at him in horror.
"No! I'll hurt you!"
He laughed, then felt bad at the way her ears and tail dropped. Raising his hands, he apologized and explained himself. Even with a strength enhancement, any injury you do to me isn't going to be that serious. I'm a bastion with a bunch of binding stones. While I can't fight Astra, I can handle a monogem champion with an amethyst. You have a way to go before you can really harm me. The other champions nodded along, although the wolf girl didn't look much happier. Even so, she still lined up and punched him. Nathan didn't feel a thing. Kiana's gem lit up, and that strange sensation appeared. The wolf girl cursed and jumped away.
That felt exactly the same as the last punch, she howled, before walking away to be healed.
That was... Kiana trailed off, staring at Nathan.
A sympathetic gem. He rubbed the bridge of his nose. I had a hunch.
I don't know what that is, she murmured.
They're rare enough that nobody teaches anything about them, he said. Normally, they don't occur until duo gem or later. A champion needs a very strong, dependent connection on their bastion.
His expression darkened.
The downside is that the gem won't function for other bastions.
Kiana didn't react to that.
It means your first gem is permanently linked to me.
He sighed. I don't see the problem, she said, staring at him with her bright blue eyes. He didn't press the topic.
It hopefully won't ever matter. What it means is that we're sharing strength. When you're attacked, you borrow my physical strength and endurance. When I'm attacked, the reverse applies.
Kiana pouted. I don't need you to protect me.
Not dying helps me stay safe, he said dryly. He reached out and ruffled her hair. It's a very powerful monogem enhancement. I just don't like the implication behind it.
Despite her look, he didn't elaborate.
The expressions on Narime's and Sen's faces said enough. Narime was old enough to know about sympathetic gems, and Ifrit must have explained them to Sen.
Nathan had fucked up.
At some point, he'd somehow made Kiana mentally and emotionally dependent on him. Given how little he had interacted with her, he struggled to see how. Wasn't that the whole point of keeping her at arm's length and keeping her out of the war? To protect her? Now that they had finished with Kiana's ceremony, Astra moved into the center of the courtyard. She tilted her head and stared at him. Time for the main event.
Chapter 27
Me? Astra asked.
In about an hour, Nathan said dryly. Do you have any idea how painful it is to reactivate your gems?
Yes.
Oh, right. Of course she did. How many times had Astra lost her bastion in the past?
Need help?
She pointed at the crate that Sen began to carry over.
The trigem one is complicated.
Nathan rolled his eyes as Sen began to pull out the catalysts. Astra had taught him this ritual. She was right that it was far more complicated, and he had needed to use it on Yefela during the disaster that befell Trefoam. You've already done enough, he said.
She blinked at him.
As he had said, drawing the ritual took 30 minutes. The champions watched with wide eyes as he and Sen drew 3 circles with connecting lines. Catalysts needed to be crushed and mixed in at different points. Piles needed to be built up in specific locations. Nathan cast several spells and wards during the process in order to prevent anything from going wrong. The last thing he needed was a servant running out and tripping. He had awful memories of losing expensive catalysts in his youth due to Vala dropping a plate of food. Once down, he shooed Sen away. Nathan then stepped over the lines carefully. Once next to Astra, he reached out and pressed his palm against her gems. Then he pumped every ounce of binding stone magic he had into them and the ritual circle. The entire courtyard burst with brilliant light. The champions covered their eyes, save for Astra, who didn't move. Slowly, Nathan felt the magic connect with Astra's gems. Once they lit up, he immediately dove into her mind. A broken tether hovered outside her mind. This once belonged to her old bastion. Nathan saw dozens of others in the distance and gulped. He recognized this place. Astra's mind was a graveyard. Something beckoned him from within her mind, and he drifted toward it. Astra's defenses brushed against him, but nothing more. He suspected this would be the point he died, if she didn't accept him. Astra's mind felt tranquil, and he felt nothing out of place. When he reached her core, he saw the many tethers hanging off it. In his original world, he had left the tethers attached, as if that showed respect. This time, he removed them all. He didn't know why, it just felt right to him. One of those tethers couldn't be severed. Nathan didn't try a second time. His memory told him that this one hadn't been there when he came here last time. The magic he had pumped into the gems was fading. One of them remained active, however. He needed to form a connection to her mind and reactivate her enhancement and gems before the magic ran out. Otherwise, the connection wouldn't take. Forming the connection didn't take as long as he thought it would. When he left her mind, there was plenty of magic left. Astra clapped. "Well done!" "We'll need to talk later about what I saw," he said with a frown. That other tether he saw made him wonder. The morning had been busy, so he sent everyone on their way. For the rest of the day, he helped Sen with her spellblade training. Her main issue was maintaining multiple spells at once, but she was getting there. For once, he actually had an empty bed. Fay had the night to herself, but hadn't returned from today's mission. Some beastkin bandits had started raiding the county, and were supposedly based in the Enclave, so she had gone there to handle them. That meant he worked late into the night, practicing his ascended magic. When she still hadn't returned, he took a shower. He didn't bother dressing in full afterward, as he planned to sleep. Tomorrow was another day of planning and preparation. Hushed voices greeted him when he returned to his bedroom. They sounded familiar. Two very scantily clad beastkin women sat on his bed. One of them held on to the other, preventing her from escaping. "Fay, what are you doing to Kiana?" Nathan asked, aware of what their nearly naked bodies were doing to his crotch. "She needs your help," Fay said, giving him a determined look. Her hands held Kiana by the waist. Kiana squirmed in Fay's grasp. She wore a simple cream nightgown with frills. It barely covered the top of her thighs and was sleeveless. By contrast, Fay wore her usual nightwear, matching black lacy panties and bra. Nathan had seen her in them so many times now that he shouldn't react to her, but that wasn't how physical attraction worked. "I'm fine," Kiana said. "You're not. I'm not," Fay insisted. "I've seen you sneaking pills. Let Nathan help you. He helps me."
"Wait, Kiana, you're already taking the medication?" Nathan asked.
He walked over to her and held a hand against her forehead. She burned up, but given the way her eyes glazed over and the sweet scent that tickled his nose, he doubted that had anything to do with being unwell.
I'm handling it," she mumbled.
He frowned. "How long?"
"Since we returned from the spires."
Sighing, Nathan pulled Fay off Kiana. Before she ran away, Nathan slipped between them and held both by their waists. Kiana froze, while Fay leaned into him with a moan. Within seconds, Fay had Nathan's cock out. His member slid free of his pants and hardened to its full length with a few strong pumps of her hand. The cat girl giggled when she saw Kiana's fingers slip beneath her nightgown.
"This can be yours," Fay whispered. "You're running. It's natural for us to be tamed. Let Nathan make you feel good."
Kiana swallowed, her eyes wide and staring at the rock-hard prick in front of her. Then she shook her head.
"I want you, Nathan," she said, looking up at him. "But can it be normal? I don't want my first time with you to be like this."
Her eyes watered. Damn, that face was unfair. Her puppy dog eyes destroyed his defenses. "You don't have to do anything you don't want to," he said. "Everything is your choice." She sighed in relief. Faye pouted, although her hands didn't stop pumping him. "But I will say that you should think carefully about how to manage your rutting. If you have it under control, then you don't need sex to decrease your libido," he explained. "Especially in your first year, the rutting can be chaotic. Next year, I'll only need to take care of you for a month at most."
"A month?" Kiana squealed.
"It's not that bad, actually. In any case, if you really think you're fine, you can go." He brushed his hands through her hair and tickled her ear. He felt the shudder that ran through her body at his touch. The fact she gasped, stuck her tongue out, and filled his nose with her arousal only made it easier. "But otherwise, you might want to join Faye," he said.
"Oh, am I teaching her how to suck cock?" Faye asked with a grin.
"Aren't you the jealous one?" Nathan asked.
"But Kiana's so cute and cuddly," Faye protested.
She crawled around behind Nathan and wrapped her arms around the horse girl.
"How can I not want to be pressed against her, hear her moan and squeal, and feel your long, hard dick move through her body?"
The cat girl's green eyes gleamed with mischief. She knew exactly what her words were doing to Kiana and to Nathan. "Faye, stop messing with Kiana. I'll gag you if you're a bad kitty," he warned. Faye blinked.
"That doesn't sound that bad."
"Bad kitty." He bopped her on the head lightly, and she giggled. Despite that, he quickly found himself with two beastkin kneeling in front of him. Kiana's hot breath blew over his shaft. She nearly went cross-eyed, staring at it.
"How does this fit down my throat?" she mumbled.
"Don't go that deep for your first time," Faye advised. "Taste the tip. Savor it. We can alternate, and I'll let you have the first meal."
"Meal?"
"Faye, don't teach her your perverted ways," Nathan said.
"Aw."
Kiana's blue eyes looked up at him uncertainly. Then she smiled. Both hers and Faye's tails swished back and forth behind their curvy asses. From this position, Nathan saw right down the horse girl's top. She wasn't wearing any underwear, and her hardened nipples pressed against the thin fabric. Next to her, Faye's beautiful, curvaceous body was on full show, as always. Her fingers dug into her panties with lewd, wet noises while she waited for her turn. The black color of her underwear hid the juices soaking them and pouring down her legs. Nathan ran his hand through Kiana's platinum blonde hair before tickling one of her ears. She moaned softly. Then she leaned forward and closed her mouth over his tip. She watched him closely. He kept a hand close to her horn, just in case it got too close to him for comfort.
"Use your tongue," Faye advised. "He likes that."
"I think she can work it out," Nathan said. "Make yourself useful." She rolled her eyes before ducking in and taking both of his balls in her mouth. He groaned as he came under assault from both angles. Kiana bobbed back and forth gently, her tongue running circles around his tip. She licked, sucked, and lapped at him. Her movements were slow, but having his loyal champion clamped on his cock was arousing enough. Below her, Faye fingered herself while suckling on his balls. She gasped and moaned, the sounds rumbling into his crotch, increasing his pleasure. After a few minutes, Faye gently pushed Kiana off. Then she took Nathan's cock all the way down her throat. Her eyes curved in pleasure as she pressed her lips against his body. She tried to say something, but the fat dick in her throat made it unintelligible.
Wow, Kiana said with wide eyes. Her throat is bulging. Am I going to do that?
Faye pulled herself off.
If you want to. Maybe not tonight.
Despite that, Kiana still tried. She bobbed back and forth along his length furiously. Her attempts to take him all the way failed, as his tip filled her little throat, and she froze each time. The fingers of each beastkin pried into each other, and they moaned sweeter and sweeter with each passing second. They covered the floor with their juices and ran their tongues and mouths along his cock. Nathan felt his climax approaching. Faye spotted it and pushed Kiana against him. The catgirl grinned as he groaned and threaded his fingers through Kiana's hair. He came. Searing ropes of his seed flooded Kiana's mouth. Her eyes widened, but Faye was behind her, her huge tits pressed against Kiana's back, and her fingers pushing the horse girl to orgasm. Drops of white escaped Kiana's lips as he pumped his load into her mouth. She spasmed as Faye pushed her to climax, giggling the entire time. Nathan slid his cock out of Kiana, then rested it on her face. She looked up at him, mouth open and full of his cum. Then she smiled, swallowed, and ran her tongue along his full length.
My turn, Faye chirped, as she pushed Kiana out of the way.
The night wasn't too long. Faye quickly grew bored of oral sex, and Nathan didn't let her tempt Kiana into something she'd regret. They snuggled up together in bed after a brief shower.
Thank you, Kiana mumbled to him before they dozed off.
It had been a good night and left a pleasant memory. News would arrive shortly that made him value nights like this. Chapter 28. An unsettling chill blew over Domar. A blizzard swept south from the far reaches, covering the north of Domar in snow and ice, and sending snowstorms flurrying south. Winter arrived with terrifying force. Nathan found himself less busy than he expected. Everyone knew the dangers of a freezing winter. The beastkin feared them and flocked together almost reflexively. Narime had centuries of experience preparing and managing responses to them. Seraph and Anna knew how to manage them. Even Faye and Sen had their share of experiences to draw on. The result was an almost effortless response from his champions across the entire duchy. Faye and Sen organized the champions to both defend the portals while providing relief efforts to towns and villages. Caravans of supplies carved their way through snowed-out roads and passes with the help of Nathan's military. Seraph and her army of clerks kept the logistics running. Nathan's paranoia paid off, ensuring there were plentiful supplies. They still needed to keep on top of them. Some warehouses and granaries were less prepared than others. Supplies were shifted to safer locations. Throughout it all, Narime and Sunstorm kept an eye on politics across the empire. Sunstorm's gem ability allowed her to move largely unimpeded through the snow, although she demanded long, heated sessions of sex whenever she made it back to Garrick Pass. Nathan didn't complain about those. In Alaik, the Prince's College unanimously voted to suspend the winter session of the Diet. Anna spoke with Alice, the Archdukes, and the other Dukes over the wireless. Apparently, it was a very brief meeting. Nobody wanted to leave their comfortable mansions in the cold, let alone abandon their territories in such a tumultuous time. The Amica Dukes were even less interested in traveling across the length of the Empire during the coldest winter in decades. The other nobles were told they could go to the capital if they wanted to, but no votes would be held and none of the committees with the dukes would sit. Naturally, nobody turned up. Anna was flooded with a flurry of letters advising her that various committees, working groups, and other social groups would gather in spring instead. Quite a few nobles expressed a desire to visit her instead of a laic. Both she and Alice found themselves playing host to a number of bored nobles, whose usual entertainment had frozen over. Slowly but surely, the empire ground to a cold and bitter halt. With less time spent managing everything and his champions busier than ever, Nathan instead found himself focused on other matters. He continued to train Vera, slowly but surely. Much of it was theoretical, but he expected to give her hands-on binding stone training within a few months. Fire continued to concern him. Her behavior was perfect, if he accepted her agitating against the nationalists. Given the rising tensions in the empire, he didn't have an excuse to say anything about that. Maybe he was being paranoid about her. He doubted that. As agreed with Alice, Astra maintained a low profile. Fortunately, the spires requested her help dealing with the invasions. Winter prevented them from rotating out the champions they left in the Halkeem Desert. The Bastions wanted to give the champions a chance to relax. Nathan had vetoed their attempt to send Astra east. He didn't know why they had wanted Astra near Tarbin, but he didn't care. Instead, he went over their heads.
"You know, I didn't expect you to show up in person," Dimitri said as he led Nathan and Faye into his suite in the Upper Jorman Spire. "But who am I to refuse such a magnificent gift?"
He hefted the engraved silver and glass case full of chocolates and expensive liqueurs.
"Sariv brings me back the occasional bottle on his trips, but I've never been willing to admit to my sweet tooth. How did you know?"
Fortunately, Nathan had an ace up his sleeve.
"Do you need me to spell out your childhood sweetheart?"
Dimitri stared at him. Then his youthful smile broke out in a broad grin.
"So daring. Ha! Yes, I used to badger Astra all the time. Figures she'd tell you my secrets. Guess I don't have a chance."
He shook his head. They settled onto some cushions. Dimitri had a dark elf servant pour imperial lagers for all of them.
"I figured you'd prefer the taste of home," he said. "Cheers."
They drank, then moved on to business. Faye looked around the opulently furnished suite, openly gawking at the centuries of history on display.
"If the Bastions are really having trouble, then I can send Astra here. Forzel Valley isn't in danger of freezing over," Nathan said.
"Fair. They're not interested in her, though."
"Of course not," Nathan scoffed.
"She's interested in coming back, however. And I doubt you want to let the Bastions have their way. Call their bluff. They've made noise about how tired their champions are. I can arrange for reinforcements in the Halkeem Desert and send Astra here."
Dimitri laughed.
"You really like pissing people off, don't you? There are lots of rumors flying around about you. Plenty of people don't think you're the real deal. But Astra trusts you. I can see why. You have a deal. Send her up here. It's not like she's in any danger. What are they going to do? Shatter their skulls on her fists? If you like, send your cat girl up too. She seemed pretty feisty when she lit up that champion in front of us."
Faye's tails and ears shot up in response, and she retreated behind Nathan.
"I think you have your answer," Nathan drawled.
With Dimitri's assistance, Nathan arranged for Astra to spend winter in the spires. Faye remained behind.
"Why?"
the dark elf asked him on the day she was to leave.
"Words," he reminded her for the thousandth time in the past couple of months. "And shouldn't you have asked me that before today?"
She glared at him.
"You know what I mean."
"Because you miss your home."
"I don't care," she said. "I'm your champion."
"Then go help me piss off some assholes in the spires. They tried some political play, and I'm turning it on its head. If anything odd happens, let me know. We still don't know who was really involved in the coup, he explained.
Then he gave Astra a pat on the back before pushing away. She strode off with a flippant wave. A horseless carriage took her to the spires. Winter continued. One morning, Nathan woke up to see Alice's mirror glowing on his desk. He grit his teeth and rushed over. The flashing lights meant she had tried to contact him. His attempts to reach her failed. Faye stirred in his bed, pawing at the indentation in sheets where he had lain. She rolled into it and stuck her arms and legs in the air. Nathan, she moaned, come back to bed. He froze, the words triggering a flood of memories. His tongue caught in his throat. She had said those exact words the morning the Yefela from his world had died. This time, he didn't tell her to go back to sleep. Come on, Faye. Up we get, he said, hefting the cat girl up from the covers. Eh? She squawked, flailing around. He dragged her into the shower, despite her protestations. It was a short one, and he roughly brushed out her tail and hair afterward. She didn't fight him, which he was thankful for. Something's wrong, she said, looking up at him. Maybe, he grunted out. I saw the mirror. Alice? She asked. Maybe. Nathan, she growled. Words. Despite himself, he laughed. Sorry, Faye. I just don't like this morning. It's okay. I'm here. We're all here, she said. It will be different. She looked him in the eye. He froze and looked away. Can't slip anything past you, can I? Nope. Afterward, both of them walked up to his office. He found Seraph already inside, talking to Anna over the wireless. She frowned at him once she spotted Faye. He's here, Seraph said, then disconnected the wireless. It let out a whine. Don't tell me you knew this was going to happen? No, but Alice tried to contact me. That's not good, he said. Ah, so you're just jumpy. You have that look in your eyes that suggests you're about to have a bad day. Seraph slipped on top of the desk. The Emperor collapsed. Alice is in a panic. Nathan clenched his fists. But Seraph continued, Don't worry, he's not dead. In fact, he's already awake and lively. But there are a score of mages trying to work out what happened. Alice can't keep this secret for very long. Things are about to get rapidly worse. I need to go to a lake, Nathan declared. Easier said than done. Taking a carriage could take over a week in the current weather. While he doubted nationalists would storm the palace in that time, he refused to leave Alice by herself until he confirmed the current situation for himself. Fortunately, he had a beautiful mystic fox with teleportation powers. After an hour of tail-fluffing, he convinced her to travel with him to Alaik. They would need to take multiple jumps, but could reach the city by nightfall. He let Alice know, then they set off. We could have left earlier if you didn't assault me, Narime whined during a break. You weren't complaining while my hands were in your tails. He wiggled his fingers at her, and she curled her tails around her body. It's a little hard to complain when you're turning my brain into mush, she responded. They stood in a small forest, surrounded by snow and leafless trees. Nothing moved nearby. Nathan watched his breath mist in front of his face due to the cold. While I don't mind seeing this protective side of you, you should calm down, the fox murmured to him. Her arms wrapped around him, and her tails warmed him up. Alice won't need you to panic over her. She needs you to be her rock and to guide her. I never realized I was this transparent, Nathan said. Only to those who know you, and it's a good trait. We like being able to predict at least some of what you're doing. Knowing that you'll charge across the Empire in a heartbeat if we're in danger makes me fall for you all over again. Narime giggled when he looked at her.
What? You are!
After a short break, they resumed their journey. The sun had only begun to set by the time they reached the palace. Better time than Nathan expected. The palace appeared to be functioning as normal from the outside. Once inside, appearances changed. Royal knights escorted him to the emperor's bedroom in the rear of the palace. Mages, servants, and knights massed outside. Nathan stepped past them, guided by his escorts. Inside, he saw the emperor lying on a genuinely palatial bed. He looked emaciated and old, his chest bared. Despite that, the old man argued with the robed mages by his bedside in a booming voice. For a moment, Nathan met the emperor's eyes. Then the emperor gestured to the corner and ignored Nathan. Following the gesture, Nathan saw Alice sitting in the corner by herself. She still wore a black nightgown, although she wore a thick shawl over the top. Given it was winter, her clothes covered almost her entire body. Alice, Nathan said, approaching her. Narime followed him. Alice didn't respond, and simply stared at the emperor. A cup of cold tea sat next to her. Clicking his tongue, Nathan grabbed her arm. She froze and looked up at him in a panic. After a moment, she relaxed. Nathan, when did you get here? She murmured. Let's go for a walk, he said. Before she could protest, he added, if His Majesty is in good enough health to argue with his physicians, he doesn't need you to watch over him. Let's get some food and drink. The knight saluted at him as he left, and he caught the whispered thanks from several. One subtly directed him to a nearby dining kitchen. Nathan saluted in return. He didn't know this section of the palace. The kitchen contained several servants who stood around looking worried. Leaving Narime to keep Alice company, Nathan slipped inside and asked the servants to prepare food for them. He also asked them to contact the princess's aides and gather a change of clothes for her. Then he dragged Alice into a nearby receiving room and plonked her on top of a plush sofa. He sat next to her while Narime lounged opposite them, stretching out her tails. A pair of familiar catgirl champions lurked nearby, one at the door and another in the corner. Nathan nodded at them, and they saluted in return with smiles. They were the duo Jembeastkin that had assisted him when Anna had been attacked in summer. I'm sorry, were the first words out of Alice's mouth. Don't apologize for not being a literal goddess, Nathan said. She blinked at him. Do you have the power to prevent the Emperor from growing old? Of course not, Alice spat in indignation. Good. He wanted some emotion out of her. Then you don't have anything to be sorry for. He's growing old, Alice. I'm guessing that's what the mages are saying? He raised an eyebrow. She closed her eyes. He's not that old. Why can't their magic heal him? They're saying something about his heart and how they can't make it better. But isn't that what healing magic does? Narime opened her mouth to say something, but looked at Nathan before she did so. He gestured for her to speak. Magic doesn't make us immortal, the fox said gently. We can't undo age. Healing and regeneration spells only restore our bodies to their recent state. That's why even champions grow old. At some point, you're healing a heart, a lung, or a brain that has been failing for years. Aren't there mages who know how to make it better? Alice asked. That's a major field of research for magical science, Nathan explained. Or at least it was right now. In his world, medical advances had been put aside in favor of fighting the demons. But in peace, longevity mattered more. Creating healing spells that could undo damage or a way for mages to use magic to halt aging entirely was the ultimate goal of almost every magical research institute on Domar. Alice fell silent and looked down. Before long, the servants arrived with food. They kept it simple. Simple for the palace, that is. scrambled eggs with herbs, sauerkraut, and potted fish from the nearby river, plus a simple white sauce. Nathan didn't miss the other plates they had on the serving cart, which were kept warm using a magical heating element.
"What was it like outside?" Alice asked, changing the subject.
"I couldn't tell that anything had happened, but with so many mages here,"
he trailed off.
"I figured. The Nationalists won't be able to move quickly, as the Diet isn't sitting, and they are scattered across the Empire. But they'll start raising questions."
She bit her lip.
"They'll want an election," Nathan said.
"Yes. If Grandpa isn't well, it stands that the Diet should be called and a replacement chosen. But the process could take all year. The Emperor needs to make a declaration to the Diet. Then applicants need to step forth, be filtered for eligibility, then voted on multiple times. It goes on and on. Grandpa was under consideration for nearly 2 years, Alice explained.
"That gives us a lot of time," Narime said, although her eyebrows shot up at the news of how slow the Diet moved.
"Maybe, but it will also allow the Nationalists to choose someone to rally behind, and they might request Grandpa to step down in the meantime."
"He's arguing with his mages. I'm pretty sure he'll tell the Diet to go fuck themselves," Nathan said bluntly. Alice giggled in response, nearly coughing up a mouthful of food.
"Removing an elected emperor is nearly impossible. I doubt they'll do it. But questions have been raised about..."
She paused. "Me."
"Running for empress? Or about the fact you're doing the emperor's job?" Nathan asked.
"Both. Nobody wants a civil war. Overriding the constitution would likely cause one. But if Grandpa worsens, we can..."
She stopped, then hiccuped.
"I'm sorry."
"Take your time," he said.
He held her against himself while she composed herself.
Unfortunately, the change of clothes arrived. Nathan badgered her to change, then left while Narime helped her. When he returned, Alice was being comforted.
"I don't want him to go," she cried.
Nathan pulled her into his arms. Nothing else was discussed that night. He kept her company until she dozed off in his arms, then carried her to her room. Like last time, he was given a guest room next to hers. Unlike last time, he didn't bother using it. Nathan had plenty of experience sleeping in chairs. He made good use of it to keep an eye on Alice, while Narime contacted Seraph using the wireless. The next 2 days showed a slow and gradual improvement in the Emperor's condition. Alice returned to her duties, which were now indistinguishable from the Emperor's. Princess Alice Arengar ran the Empire in all but name. On the third morning, a champion interrupted breakfast between Nathan and Alice.
"His Majesty wishes to have morning tea with you, Lord Nathan," the champion told him.
"Even the champions call you Lord," Alice teased. He left and followed his escort to the Emperor's bedroom. The crowd from the other day was missing. Instead, the Emperor sat outside in a large courtyard. Heaters glowed around him, ensuring that he didn't feel the chill, and Nathan felt the power of countless wards and barriers in the air.
"Ah, Nathan, join me," the Emperor said, waving the champion away. "I figured we could chat over some coffee. Help yourself to the food."
The Emperor sat beside a large table which contained a steaming pot of coffee and a serving tray loaded with food. Various breads, pastries, sausages, and extravagant desserts met Nathan's eyes. Despite being winter, the Emperor wanted for nothing. Nathan doubted this was normal. He ate with Alice every morning, and her meals had as much preserved food as what he served at Garrick Pass. While much of this food was also preserved, it was also a show of respect for the Emperor by his staff. They had likely raided their food stocks for him. Unlike last time, the old man was properly dressed. He didn't bother with the cloak, however.
"No beastkin?" Nathan asked, looking around for the women he knew attended to the Emperor.
Chuckling, the Emperor said,
"I'm spending time with them elsewhere in the palace. Things have been difficult lately."
I don't want their last memories of me to be of a gaggle of mages, waving their hands in the air and shouting strange words. A man can have his pride, can't he?
When the Emperor raised his mug of coffee, Nathan clinked his against it in return. They drank in silence for a short while.
I'm sorry that we never had the chance to have that chat I wanted, the old man said. Isn't that what this is? Ha! True.
A sigh.
I can trust you with Alice. You've proven that. Everything you've done so far speaks greatly of you as a man and a bastion of Omria. I wanted the goddess to provide me with a path, when everything seemed shrouded in darkness. While my path may remain dark, yours and Alice's is brighter than I ever imagined.
Once again, Nathan felt at a loss for words. What do you say to a man who is facing death, especially when he is passing his legacy on to you?
I doubt I need to tell you what to do, or give you objectives or any such nonsense, the Emperor said. Truthfully, you're moving with an alacrity that suggests you know more than I do. Today is simply a way to talk with the man that my beloved granddaughter fell in love with.
Nathan nearly choked on the slice of apple turnover he was chewing. The Emperor chuckled in response.
It is fairly obvious, the old man said. I've always been worried about her. Such a tomboy, refusing to wear dresses, sticking to her grandfather despite all the political problems it causes. Hans and I tried to find a suitor for her, but she chased them all away. Then she bumped into you, while rampaging around like usual, and transformed into a princess overnight.
Maybe, Nathan said.
There's no maybe about it. It's a good thing. I had Leo for my reign, but while we were friends, I feel that I burdened him with too much and gave him too little. You can be Alice's equal, in a way that Leo never felt he was.
And what of the Constitution?
Burn it, the Emperor said simply,
then chuckled.
Well, maybe don't go that far, but the Empire has changed over millennia. It can survive the granddaughter of an Archduke becoming Empress. Sometimes the rules get in the way of the best solution, and nobody wants Tarbin on the throne, or one of his patsies. No offense.
None taken. He might be my father, but it doesn't mean much, Nathan said.
I'd say you take after your mother more, an excellent countess who made a single foolish mistake, the Emperor said suddenly. Do you still have her mirror?
Mirror? Nathan froze. It came back to him. When he first arrived in this world, he had found a small hand mirror in his belongings. That same mirror still sat in the bottom of a drawer in his bedroom, back in Garrick Pass. He had always felt that Alice's mirror felt familiar. No wonder. He had seen the exact same mirror almost a full year earlier.
I do. Nathan frowned. Do you know who has the other one?
Ah, you only have one of the pair? Unfortunate. Those mirrors are rare. If they're not responding to it, I imagine the other half is in Tarbin's possession. Or perhaps somewhere else entirely. When your mother passed, he sold most of her estate in a rage. Such a petty man.
A memory came to Nathan's mind. Tarbin had been forced into the marriage with Nathan's mother, and her death had enraged the man. His response had been to destroy and sell off as much of her legacy as possible, despite the attempts of her family to intervene.
I'll need to look into the sale records, Nathan said.
Good. You should focus on your mother's legacy, not Tarbin's, the Emperor said.
They chatted about this and that. At some point, Alice's childhood came up, and the Emperor did what doting grandparents usually did, by bringing up embarrassing stories. Nathan stored these away in his mind, aware that Alice must never know that he knew about them. The coffee pot ran empty, and Nathan realized he had whiled away over an hour here. A comfortable silence settled over them. Questions ate at Nathan, some of them deeply discomforting. Why had he never experienced anything like this in Falmir? Had everything he thought he had with Charlotte been insincere? More pertinently, he needed to ask one thing of the aging ruler in front of him.
"Your Majesty, I have a rather serious topic to raise," Nathan said.
I can imagine a few. Go ahead. I doubt there is much meaning to remaining silent, even if Leo might believe otherwise.
Did you have any connection to the cascade in the spires? Nathan asked.
The Emperor chuckled, deep and hearty. Too deeply, even. He coughed and slapped himself on the chest. No guard stood nearby, so Nathan rose to help him, but was waved off.
I'm fine. Goddess, you surprised me. So blunt. Ambassador Sarive made an interesting comment that you were fearless. Did you ask the council something similar?
The Emperor's eyes twinkled.
I didn't waste my time.
So you would have, if you felt they'd answer truthfully. Impressive.
After finishing a slice of pumpkin pie, the Emperor gave an answer.
Yes and no. I am connected to the web through the council. Councillor Valeria is an old friend of mine. Like you and Alice, we have our own pair of mirrors. I was leaning on her for support against the Federation.
And the cascade? Nathan pressed.
While the goddess may have provided it to us, I had no direct role. My suspicion is that my intervention triggered opposition in the spires. The Empire is an age-old foe of the spires, after all. Although we are all believers, we once aspired to control all of Domar.
The old man grimaced.
I doubt it was divine intervention, however. An intentional cascade is true heresy, beyond what you accuse Tonius of. Divine providence protected us from evil, and Leo nearly died for it.
Divine providence, huh? Nathan didn't correct the Emperor. After all, the true reason the Empire and Federation had been able to resist the cascade was the opposite of divine. If even someone as devout as the Emperor couldn't tell the difference, did Omria even matter? To Nathan, the only thing that made a difference were his actions. Right now, those were to protect the Empire and all of Domar. His enemies would strike soon, and he planned to be ready.
Chapter 29 Leopold arrived at the palace several days later, along with his closest champion, May.
Has word leaked? Nathan asked him, surprised to see the old bastion.
They strode through the empty grand hall. Water ran down the outside of the ceiling and windows, as the wards of the palace melted the falling snow upon impact with the palace.
Unfortunately, I had hoped to buy more time by staying away. The Prince's College has arranged to speak over the wireless,
Leopold answered.
Alice mentioned that something had been arranged. She planned to have the Emperor step in, but if they already know, then I'll tell her not to bother,
Nathan said, gesturing a royal knight over. After he relayed the message for Alice, he and Leopold headed for the inner throne room. It was empty now. Melis spent most of her time in the castle overlooking the city, leaving the defense of the Emperor to hers and the spymaster's champions.
How did they find out? The mages? Nathan asked.
Your absence was noted.
What?
You're a very popular man. When you up and vanish, many people take note. Some of us already suspected that anything involving you might create waves, given the movement the Beastkin are creating across the Empire.
Leopold chuckled and slapped his arm, where a beastkin might wear Nathan's crest. After the Spires incident, that theory was confirmed.
Damn. Nathan knew that would come back to bite him.
In other words, my army mobilized and people noticed, he said dryly. Not this time. Your knights are already very active, given the weather. Instead, it was your little movement of beastkin.
Leopold gestured to his arm, where someone might display a crest.
Which has made things both better and worse. Better because nobody can accuse you of preparing for civil war, as you didn't take action yourself. Worse because everyone noticed.
Is that what they're discussing over the wireless? Nathan asked.
Leopold shrugged. I doubt it. They need to consider whether to recall the Prince's College. Tarban is already returning.
What happened to defending the Halkeem Desert?
Like he cares, the old bastion growled. Plus, you convinced Tarius and Ilmarn to send additional champions there.
Then all we can do is wait. And wait they did.
Nadime brought Fae and Sen to the palace in the time they had, in anticipation of something going horribly wrong. If the Nationalists tried something, it would be here. While Melis defended the palace, Nathan didn't trust her to stop a coup attempt if the Emperor wasn't directly threatened. Things finally came to a head nearly 2 weeks later. Winter held strong, but it was now well into January. Nathan had returned to Garrick Pass for days at a time. Creating a gateway to Alaik had been on his mind, but he needed a suitable location for it. Fortifying one hadn't been possible. Melis held both suitable locations and had vetoed his request. So he relied on Nadime and kept his movements limited. But Tarban eventually arrived in Alaik, which meant confrontation approached. Nathan shifted to the palace again. He passed the time by training Sen and continuing to do his paperwork. Alice had given him room in her obscenely huge office. The only condition was that he wasn't allowed to have sex in it. Later, she added the condition that he wasn't allowed to play with the tails of his champions after she spent an hour listening to Nadime's moaning.
"Do you think Tarban will try to remove Grandpa?" Alice asked one day.
"Didn't you already head that off?" he replied, busy reading through a proposal to add a massive hot spring below Garrick Pass.
Apparently, Nadime wrote it. It wasn't unanimous. The Amakadukes don't see the point in starting the election process in winter when the spring session is so soon, Alice said. But Tarban might want a declaration from Grandpa.
And? Let him try. The Emperor's hatred for Tarban is public knowledge.
But if they meet,
they won't. Melis will turn Tarban into a pancake before that happens. While she'll stand by and let everyone squabble over the throne, she won't let Tarban touch the Emperor, Nathan said.
Footsteps thundered down the hall outside the office. Both of them paused. Fae looked up from where she lounged on the sofa before rising and walking to the door. Someone knocked, then entered. A royal knight poked his head in, and two more stood behind him.
Your Imperial Highness, Count von Straub is approaching the palace with an armed retinue, the knight said. We are here to—
Thank you.
Nathan, let's go, Alice said, rising from her seat. Nathan joined her after a moment. His mind didn't instantly recognize the name, as very few people called Tarban by his surname or title. The knight turned and stared at Nathan. He felt the pressure from that stare, but shook his head at the knight.
Where's Bastion Leopold? Nathan asked the knight. He's already in the Grand Hall.
He knows?
Yes. He informed us after the spymaster's agent spotted the count, the knight said.
Then he paused and glanced at Alice surreptitiously. Nathan got the point.
Fae, give Alice a hand. You'll stick to her like glue.
The look he received from Alice was murderous, but she allowed Fae to chase her to one side of the office. Fae would keep her safe.
The knight leaned in and said, Bastion Melis's orders are to avoid confrontation, but I can gather those knights loyal to you, my lord.
Something about the intonation of my lord threw Nathan off.
Very few people called him that. Everyone called him Nathan, Sir, Bastion, or Lord Nathan. But there was one horse beastkin who insisted on calling him my lord. Nathan glanced past the royal knight and spotted the telltale signs of a tail swishing under a tabard. His Majesty's safety is paramount, Nathan insisted. The knight stiffened. But I'll take everyone you can spare, so long as you can remember that.
Yes, my lord,
the knight shouted, straightening and snapping off a noisy salute. He turned to the other knights.
Escort her Imperial Highness to the Grand Hall. I will see you there shortly.
He rushed off. Nathan and the others began their walk to the Grand Hall. Word spread quickly, despite the size of the palace. The clerks and servants kept to their stations, giving the building an eerie feel. Each footstep they took echoed down the palatial stone and steel halls. What was that about? Alice asked.
Tarbin's potentially going to pull a coup. We need to be ready, Nathan replied.
I see. By the time they arrived in the Grand Hall, their guests had already arrived. A dozen finely dressed men stood at the far end of the hall, accompanied by a handful of female champions and a single noblewoman. Nathan guessed her to be one of their wives, although he didn't know if she had dragged her husband here or if it was the other way around. Nerevia stood next to Tarbin. She grimaced when she spotted Nathan enter the hall and looked away. Tarbin had one other champion with him, a blonde sorceress in an elegant white robe with two sapphires. Leopold and his champion stood in front of the throne. The duogem catgirls from the spymaster accompanied him, their short swords bared. Royal knights and guards formed a rough circle in the hall, roughly centered on Tarbin's group.
"Bring him out!" Tarbin shouted.
The crowd nodded along with him. Nathan recognized most of them from the diet he had attended earlier in the year. Two of the others wore Bastion uniforms and presumably controlled the other champions. Nathan recognized one from his world, although only vaguely. None of the champions jogged his memory. "His Majesty is recuperating," Alice declared as she stepped forward. "You will be able to speak with him once he has recovered."
"So you admit that he's unwell? Then he's unfit to remain emperor," Tarbin shouted.
Jeers rose up from the nationalists. They pointed and shouted. Nathan imagined they had practiced this, but they didn't have the mass of angry followers they likely expected to have with them. For once, Nathan felt thankful for this bitter winter.
"Stop wasting everyone's time, Tarbin," Nathan said aloud. "You don't lose your county every time you hit yourself in the face with your own sword and need a week off to recover. His Majesty will be fine."
"The fuck was that, you little shit?"
Tarbin growled, stomping forward. Nerevia and the blonde sorceress physically stopped him. The blonde shot Nathan a dirty look, and he simply returned it with a raised eyebrow.
"Was I wrong?" Nathan asked.
"The Empire needs strength right now, not a shriveled prune who can barely walk and lets this pathetic slut run things for him,"
Tarbin said after he straightened up.
"Gortal needs to admit he's done. For once in his life, he should use his spine and step down."
This time, the nationalists didn't jeer. They watched the knights and champions warily. In turn, they were glared down. The knights clenched their weapons tighter, and the champions in the room bared their teeth.
"Calm down," Nathan said to the beastkin champions. Only Leopold's champion, May, had kept her cool.
"But," Faye mumbled,
"the words of a dumb asshole don't hurt anyone. Let him say stupid shit all he likes," Nathan said. "What will hurt is reacting to them as if he does matter."
"I can hear you," Tarbin shouted.
Nathan rolled his eyes. This was becoming genuinely juvenile. Unfortunately, that was exactly Tarbin's intention. By forcing a confrontation like this, Tarbin dragged everyone down to his level. They all became covered in mud.
Tarbin reveled in it, because he spent every day mired in muck, but it would cling to Alice and Nathan. Before Nathan could de-escalate, footsteps thundered behind them. Too late, he realized his mistake. Dozens of royal knights poured into the rear of the grand hall. Every single one of them wore Nathan's crest openly. Well, shit.
There's something to be said for subtlety, Leopold chided him, but he was smiling.
I didn't expect them to wear the damn things. Nathan rubbed the bridge of his nose.
We don't pay the knights to think about politics. That's our job. Remember that in the future. Your champions are different, but the soldiers and knights just want to stab everything that opposes you, Leopold said.
Even after all this time, Nathan still had things to learn. Well, Leopold did have a couple of decades on him.
I see how this is, Tarbin said, a smirk on his face. A coup.
Alice's face paled.
Ah, yes, a coup, Nathan said dryly. By the Imperial Princess, His Majesty's oldest friend, the Royal Knights, and the Spymaster. And it all took place while Bastion Malus still controls the palace. Did you fall down the Pearlescent Canyon while in Trefome, Tarbin? Because you're stupider than usual.
Don't play dumb. We can all see that crest. You've seized control of the palace.
I don't think you heard a word I said.
Alice looked back at Nathan with a grimace. He gestured for her to get back. When she didn't move, Fay pulled her back. The knights and champions knew what was about to happen. The nationalist bastions and champions readied themselves. The tension was thick enough to taste with one's tongue.
We have no choice, Tarbin cried.
He pulled a hand axe from his waist.
Fellow bastions, we must—
Oh, for fuck's sake, Nathan interrupted. This is treason, Tarbin. Think for a second. Stop shouting nonsensical, propagandistic bullshit. The nationalists froze. Nerevia stared at Nathan, unmoving. Unlike every other warrior in the room, she hadn't moved an inch.
I'm speaking the truth, you little shit, Tarbin said, abandoning the pretentious speech he had. The Empire must be returned to its glory.
Great. Wonderful. I don't care. Make another move and I'll remove your head from your shoulders. The same goes for the other bastions and their champions,
Nathan declared, looking his enemies in the eyes.
Treason is punishable by death. Trying to dethrone an elected emperor and seize the palace is treason.
As if you can,
Tarbin barked out a laugh.
Nerevia, blow his balls off.
Slowly, Nerevia stepped forward. She drew a hand crossbow from one of the dozens of weapon holsters strapped to her dark skin. Her amethysts glowed, and the crossbow bolt gleamed with light. Fae's scimitar exploded with flames. Nathan didn't budge. At this range, it was an effective threat, given Nerevia's gem ability. Nothing happened for several long seconds. Nathan raised an eyebrow.
Well, I'm not going to waste my time on you, Nerevia. You're a champion, aren't you? Take the shot.
Seriously? I'm about to neuter you, and that's your best effort?
Nerevia snapped.
You can't even be bothered to call me a bitch or something?
What the hell are you doing, you bitch? Tarbin growled.
The dark elf rolled her eyes.
Yeah, that doesn't do it anymore.
Nathan gave her a look of disdain.
I only expend effort on people who are worth it. You made your choice. Follow through on it, or leave. You already did that once.
Nerevia grimaced.
I didn't mean to—
Nerevia!
Tarbin snarled at the same time, reaching for her. She spun and pointed her crossbow at him. The massive bastion recoiled in fear. The crossbow twanged. Sapphire gems glowed, and a gleaming field of light snapped into existence around the nationalists.
Nerevia's crossbow bolt slammed into it, then punched through, leaving cracks like a pane of glass. Tarbin cursed as it cut into his thigh and he went down. The other champions moved for Nerevia, but she danced away until she was next to Nathan.
"Does that count as being worth it? I want some good insults later," she said to him. "And a good fucking, too. I've been dying for another turn since the spires."
"I'll kill you! You can't betray me!" Tarbin roared.
He rose to his feet, eyes full of fire. Magic poured out from the furious bastion. Instantly, Nathan knew what was going to happen. A golden pentagon glowed around his back. Everyone looked at him in surprise, but Nerevia's expression only expressed sorrow.
"Damn. Guess I'll have to ask for a rain check," she said. "At least I got to see little Nathan become big Nathan."
She smirked at him. He ignored her, focused on his spell. The moment it ended, he grabbed Nerevia and dove into her mind. A tether ran toward Nerevia's core, past her outer defenses. It crackled with magic. Binding stone magic. Tarbin was going to fry Nerevia's mind. Nathan crackled with magic of his own. He shot past Nerevia's mental defenses. They reached for him, but recoiled upon contact with his mental spell. This spell was crude, but it allowed him to dive into most minds without forming a gentler connection. Part of him knew the true use of this spell, forcibly manipulating others. The twins used more complicated versions of this on him in order to try to control him. He had been testing this on them, although it was far too weak to actually work on them. Mora never let him close to her core during practice. But against someone like Nerevia, who didn't know mental magic, the spell blew past her defenses. Nathan arrived at the core in record time. He normally worried about upsetting a champion's mind during a mental dive. This time, he worried about Tarbin beating him here. More to the point, he didn't have a ritual to support him. He didn't even have a nearby binding stone. Obscene amounts of magic evaporated with each second. His body physically burned as he cast the spell. Something told him that using ascended magic without the binding stone had been a mistake. At the same time, he understood the magic far better. It clicked with his mind, no pun intended, given this was mental magic. Nathan hovered beside the core of Nerevia's mind. Two satellites hovered around it, as did the tether to Tarbin's mind, which crackled with power in the distance. The clock ticked down before that power reached Nerevia. Once it did, she was dead. Nathan lacked any experience using mental magic like this. He hadn't learned it for the purpose of attack. Paranoia about fire and the unknown had scared him enough to focus on it, as he knew so little about succubi. Now it was the only thing that might allow him to save Nerevia. But he might also kill her. Her mind fought against him. The danger of forcibly claiming a champion was that it might cause their mental state to reject the bastion. If Nathan severed the connection to Tarbin and created his own tether, the most likely result was that Nerevia rejected him. He remembered her final words before he dove into her mind. They had been soft and kind. If those had been honest, then maybe he had a chance. If he was wrong, then she was dead anyway. Focusing on those thoughts, Nathan committed to his course of action. He severed Tarbin's tether. The binding stone power crackled uselessly along it, finding no outlet. Without waiting, Nathan connected his mind to Nerevia's. Her mind burst into a hive of activity, and her gems flared. Realizing he was in danger and burning magic at a dangerous rate, Nathan retreated. When he re-emerged into reality, barely 10 seconds had passed.
"Nathan!"
Faye shrieked, shaking his arm. He shook her off and held on to Nerevia. Her eyes were vacant as she collapsed to the ground. The magic from Tarbin and Nathan slowly faded, but almost everyone had sensed it. The hall was packed.
packed with champions, mages, bastions, and spellblades.
Ha! The Empire has no room for traitors,
Tarbin declared, standing with help from his remaining champion. Leopold grit his teeth.
You are right about that.
Bloodthirst filled the hall. In a second, all-out battle would break out.
Holy shit, Nerevia gasped out. What the fuck just happened?
And just like that, imminent bloodshed halted. Everyone stared at Nerevia.
How do you feel? Nathan asked.
Like shit. Huge headache, she mumbled, holding a hand against her head. How is she alive? I know that I...
Tarbin trailed off with a grimace. Nathan felt power flare from the bear of a man. Nothing happened. Nerevia looked at her old bastion. Then she looked at Nathan in confusion. Her hands slowly rose to her amethysts, and her expression changed to shock.
Nathan, you...
Nerevia fell silent, a trace of fear in her eyes. Beneath that fear, Nathan saw desire. How very like Nerevia.
I'm glad you're still yourself, he said dryly.
Then he stood up and glared at Tarbin.
You're attempting a coup against the Emperor. Now you just tried to kill a loyal champion of the Imperial Army. I think that's enough treason for one day, Tarbin. I will never bow to a man who leads this great nation to its doom, Tarbin shouted. Then you're in luck, because I don't need you to bow, a deep voice boomed.
The Emperor strode into the hall, flanked by a massive retinue of servants, knights, and champions. He walked unaided, save for his ebony cane. If Nathan hadn't seen his state over the past few weeks, he would believe the man to be as healthy as always.
I catch a cold and you try to overthrow the Empire? If I visit my summer home, will you try to burn down the capital, Tarbin? The Emperor bellowed. Enough of this nonsense. You cannot fool us, came the response. An election must be called. Then call it, you idiot, the old ruler scoffed. The Diet will sit in a few weeks. So you can lie to them about how everything is fine? You and Milgar have given everything to...
Tarbin managed to stop himself from insulting Alice in front of the Emperor.
To Princess Alice, she cannot rule.
Humph.
Then allow me to settle this with the Diet, not you and your thugs.
The Emperor pointed his cane at Tarbin.
If the Diet is unconvinced of my health by next spring, then I will call an election. The electors can decide if they accept my terms. You cannot! I have already spoken with the Archdukes. They accepted my proposal. I doubt the Prince's College will disagree.
The Emperor stared down Tarbin. No further words were spoken. Tarbin glared at his opponents with a fierceness that suggested he would kill them all with his bare hands if he could. Then he and his gang left, leaving Nerevia with Nathan. Once the nationalists fled, the Emperor walked to the throne and slumped in it. Alice ran to her grandfather and doted over him, along with several of his servants. Nathan and Leopold looked at each other. They now had a deadline to prepare for.
Chapter 30.
Should we have just killed Tarbin? Alice asked Nathan through the mirror a week later. The Emperor's declaration had calmed a delicate situation. He won the support of the Archdukes and Dukes, and through them, the vast majority of the counts in the Empire. Not everyone was happy, but no one was screaming for civil war. Nathan returned to Garrick Pass, and normalcy resumed, or the closest thing to it, given Domar was frozen over. The main change was that Nerevia had accompanied him on his return.
Tarbin is a pawn, Nathan said.
If we killed him and the other instigators, it wouldn't stop civil war. The archdukes who back him would have used his death to rebel. They're the true power behind the nationalists.
What about Falmir? Nerevia said that Tarbin worked with them.
Nathan closed his eyes. That had been a deeply awkward discussion. Nerevia had confirmed Gareth's presence in the city and the assassination attempt against Anna. Her words pinned Tarbin as a literal traitor to the Empire. Like with Seraph, her position as champion protected her, but it also connected Falmir with the Nationalists.
"We have to assume that civil war will mean war with our neighbors," Nathan said. "Maybe the Archdukes have made a deal with Falmir. Maybe they're deluded enough to think that Falmir won't invade. It doesn't matter. The moment the Empire's armies turn on each other, we'll be invaded."
"Is there another option?" Alice asked.
"It depends."
"Doesn't everything?"
Her tone turned snippy. Nathan chuckled.
"Aren't you the political expert? You tell me."
"Everyone interested in the throne will come forward early. The Nationalists will find out if there are candidates who will beat theirs. They have several, but their most powerful and charismatic members aren't eligible."
Alice groaned, reciting something she had probably said a dozen times by now.
"Tarbin and the Archdukes, namely. The Constitution blocks them, for the same reason it blocks both of us."
Nathan smirked at the irony.
"Yes, if they don't believe they can seize the throne, they might try to change the Constitution. But that would be impossible right now. Almost everyone needs to support it, including Grandpa."
"And they wouldn't anyway."
"Why not?"
Alice sounded confused.
"Because it's self-defeating, Alice. If they let Tarbin run, I can run. If they let an Archduke run, you can run," he said.
"Oh."
"So the short version is that they'll mess around in the Diet for a year, try to convince people to back their candidate for Emperor, and then throw a tantrum if they know they're going to fail," Nathan summarized. "Milgar plans to put Anna forward."
"I heard."
Alice's tone was decidedly neutral.
"You've spoken to her?"
"Have you?"
"At length," Nathan chuckled. "I'm aware of how badly she does not want to become Empress, Alice. The plan isn't to run for the throne, but to frustrate the Nationalists."
"I know. I just feel bad that she's being used to shield me," Alice said.
In the mirror, the princess played with her long hair. Nathan got the sense she wanted to be next to him again. They had spent a lot of time together recently.
"She's popular," Alice continued. "The Amakadukes like her because she's their gateway to trade. The counts from weaker and younger families love her because they aspire to be her. And a lot of other people know that she's connected to me, or that something bigger is going on."
"That you'll become Empress rather than her," Nathan said.
"Yes."
They ended the conversation after saying a very long goodbye. Nathan stared at the mirror for several minutes. After everything he had done, it all came down to civil war. Nathan wasn't even trying to avoid it. All his efforts to avoid catastrophes had failed in the past. He had been forced to play catch-up while fighting the plans of his enemies, Kadria's boss, Tanius, the Spires, and Falmir. This time, he would be proactive. The Emperor had scheduled a date for the election. Nathan wanted Alice on the throne. Anything less would lead to a civil war in the future. So he prepared for one on his terms. Frustrate the Nationalists. Make Anna and Alice popular. Continue to build his armies and strengthen his champions. Prepare for large-scale war. When it finally came, he needed to crush the rebels in the Empire, put Alice on the throne, and then banish Falmir's plans to expand its territory. The previous year of hard work was slowly paying off. Now Nathan needed to keep it up. For now, he had a more immediate problem that was closer to home. Much closer. In his head, even. One day, he stepped inside the black door of his office. A humming greeted his ears. For once, Kadria was here. She lay on top of her bed, bronzed legs high in the air as she read a book. Her body was as lacking in clothing as ever. He came in here reasonably often. Kadria was missing more often than not. When he did catch her, she refused to say much about what was going on. His time with her felt more comfortable than informational. Or perhaps sexual, given the frequency with which she sucked his cock. She was a succubus, after all. "I take it you're happy to see me," Kadria said, her eyes focused on his crotch. "Well, you're here for once, so maybe I am," he replied, ignoring the fact she was talking about the swelling in his pants. "You have some permanent housemates you can use to relieve yourself. No need to wait for me," she replied. "My champions aren't housemates," he replied coldly. She rolled her eyes. "I meant the twins, idiot. Their main purpose in life is to be pressed into the ground, legs bent over their shoulders, while they make stupid noises because they're being fucked silly. Why not join in? I'm trying to avoid my morals being warped by theirs," Nathan said. "They don't seem to be going anywhere. Unlike you, they're always here.